I'm Subhakar Tikireddy, founder of the Moon Devs, and this is, Abhijit. He's into the HRI. He's been on a podcast with Conan, and yeah, I'll let him introduce himself in a bit more time. In the Moon Devs, we are starting a dev cohort. Okay, cohort is a group of individuals across the globe, and they are really interested in, building something in innovation or, something at the edge tech level. The essential idea is basically people who want to build something and they are not looking for business expansion or, basically we are not Y Combinator. You get me? They are looking to start their own venture or, scale or all that thing. But the people I'm looking for is basically people who are interested in actually building the part and not scaling the part. Because the invention or the innovation happens when you just start beginning it. You get me? That is the intent of the cohort. And currently we are just kickstarting, and we are gonna meet every new cohort member. And this Abhijit fellow is my first invitation to the cohort because I know him, and he's very much into the edge tech. I have a few other friends as well, who are in the edge tech, but in robotics, I guess Abhijit takes the prime. Yeah, go ahead, Abhijit. Maybe you can just tell us a bit about yourself, and then.
Okay, sure. Thank you, Subhakar. So I know Subhakar since a very long time. We were both in the same university doing our undergrad, IIT Patna. After doing my undergrad in India in mechanical engineering, I went to Oregon State University in USA for my master's in robotics. And I had a special interest in understanding humans' relationship with robots. And how can we build robots that will, really amplify people's lives, help them? And, when you're working at the edge of, humans and robots, there are a lot of different fields that you need to learn about. So when I was at Oregon, I got to learn about psychology, anthropology, hard tech robotics, and related fields to, come up with the best solutions, come up with the best research. Interesting research that needs to be done to make robots successful around people and make the robots being useful for people. So I want to build robots and actually put them in front of people and see how their interaction looks like. And within a few seconds you get to know whether it's working or not working. So that sort of immediate feedback from looking at people, how they're interacting with robots, is what really drives me with my current projects. And I'm doing human AI interaction, where we are looking into, how can we use and integrate AI into flight systems, whether it's a drone or a commercial Boeing jetliner. You can think of different ways in which AI can really amplify and help people in those scenarios.
See, one thing, I kind of observed with you and with anyone with, the same passionate mindset as we have, right? We don't really care about what we need to learn to build what we want to build. The thing is, when you have such a spirit, you become an individual of not just one particular technology, as a giant expert or anything like that. But when you are an expert or, when you're learning multiple things and when you're gathering them all these together, that's where I believe innovation starts happening.
Right.
Right, because if you
Totally
just
agree.
innovation starts happening when you mix and match multiple industries, energies, and all that stuff. Another thing I really like about what you do is that robot human interaction, right? So before I was a developer, I was a designer, so I was into UX UI. So my entire frame mindset of a UX UI is the screen, what I build inside the screen, what I do inside the screen. And the instant that I learned about what you build, right, human robot interaction, so that thing is like out of the box. So I was thinking about UX inside the screen, and you guys are already thinking about UX of, of the machines and how they interact with human beings, and that thing I really love. When the thing is, I just want to continue with one of the conversations that we had, right? You said your particular field, like human robotic interaction, right? It is getting narrowed down, and it has not a big job market at this moment, correct? So why is this happening? Can you maybe
As I mentioned, so I think the field of human robot interaction, like people who are experts in human robot interaction, who research these things, either come from like an engineering background, design background, research background, psychology background. So these are like people who are generalist
Yeah.
at some level,
Yeah.
because they need to have some information and some insight in all these fields to be able to, you know, do this like multi-discipline research. And when it comes to companies, like they have a product to make. They want to grow their company. You know, they have an engineering team, they have a design, like small design team, and they have the sales team. Out of all those four things, I can do something of all these things. But, you know, I don't see myself as like purely a software engineer who goes into the engineering department, or purely a research person because I like to build things, or purely like something else, a designer. Thinking about HRI, it is like individuals who are like passionate engineers who have like a passion for HRI, and they are the ones making decisions, or people doing research who already have like research background, something else, but they are also like making HRI decisions. And I think that is fine, but you know, the field is not recognized by industry as like something which is very essential, and hiring for people who have HRI background, like that doesn't really happen, because they see like it's a decision that our design folks can easily manage to make, and let us like go with that. There's no per se like a industry or like a financial need that is crying out for like an HRI person. So because of that, like we are not seeing that many, you know, job openings for people who are like generalists like us.
But I think, you know, in the future, there will be a lot of, just like UX UI designers, no? When apps started coming into place, people were okay with that, you know, stupid Excel sheets and, you know, the old Google website, how it looked and all. But when they got overpopulated, so people started caring about how the experience is, you know, how, you know, how the user is, you know, perceiving all these screen actions and all that. And then you have Steve Jobs kicking in and, you know, totally redesigning the entire UX UI with his Apple stuff. But yeah, the thing I'm saying is it will change, because when the worldwide appliances are very much robotic dependent, which I think this is where I want to come into play, right? You said 2018 was the year that the four robots thing, you know, was invented, right? Can you
which thing was invented?
It was not invented. You guys were working, you know, in 2018.
Yeah, I was an intern at the Everyday Robot Project.
Was already trying to build, you know, a robot that is capable of doing everyday actions in a household, right?
Right.
So if you go back into the time frame, like before 2018, when was the year that robot had started, you know, some level of innovation was started happening?
It has been happening since a very long time.
Like
the earliest really like impressive robots, maybe not that impressive now, but back then they were like really, really impressive, were like robots, like, I mean, the ones that come to my mind immediately are Shaky, like that came from the 1970s from Stanford. And it was like a, you know, a pretty big robot, I would say, like, you know, think about like maybe 4 feet by 3 feet or something, like these big boxes, and the intelligence was like very minimal and small. So you can see like that was the first attempt at making a general purpose, you know, home robot as such. And people who built it are very like IBM like people, like wearing ties and pants back in the 70s, and it was the cutting edge back then. So it has been a gradual process, right? So there has been improvements in all different areas, like be it like sensing, be it like perception algorithm, be it like actual processing power of the robot, be it in actually hardware improvements for the design of robots. And when I was at Google X 2018, I think the people there thought that, you know, the time had come for us to actually, you know, really give a shot at making a general purpose robots, because that
all the capabilities are falling in place.
Have all those capabilities, but it wasn't true. It isn't true right now. If even if we have like very make good capabilities, maybe the product market fit is not there. And people are still like right now trying to get that product market fit with the current capabilities that robots have. And we will see like in the next 5 years, this field is going to just like go like crazy, and it's going to be like very, very active.
I want to share a prediction. Okay, this is the most important point that I really wanted to discuss with Abhijit, because this was, ever since I made this prediction, I was shivering. Okay, so basically what happened was 2024, 17th March. Okay, at that time of the day, I launched an article. So it is still by date, it is by far my best article I have written so far. And it is an article that talks about emerging rivalry between AI and dev. That means AI and developers. So the emerging rivalry between AI and dev. So me and Pramod had a conversation. Pramod is an AI research scientist, and me and him were having this conversation. And at that time we were discussing like the prediction of what is going to happen in March 2026. So we were predicting on what will happen on March 2026, right? So he was trying to convince me that, you know, the developer will be eliminated. Like the AI will come into place and, you know, the developer will be eliminated and, you know, AI will do the whole job. And I was not really convinced back then, because, you know, AI was already doing that to some extent back then in 2024 itself. It was doing some extent of auto completion like GitHub Copilot and all that stuff. And towards the end of the 2024, we had Cursor and everything coming into place. Towards the start of this year, we had Bolt.new, and we had Replit, and everything that is coming, you know, faster and faster, right? When I try to understand, you know, how the AI LLMs and MPC protocols and what has been happening in the AI, then I came to a very, very shivering conclusion that, you know, developers, at least the junior developers, will be totally eliminated. Will be totally eliminated even right now, right? See, for example, I'm building a particular product. Actually, we are already building a particular product for the upcoming Y Combinator. When I was designing the infrastructure for this entire thing, right, the way I designed it was, we can get this giant complex thing done with just three developers. All I needed was three developers. So with three developers, I can, you know, do integrations for up to 300 plus SDKs. So 300 plus SDKs with just three developers. Usually in the back in the day, if I go back to 2024, you know, 17th March, if I had to do that, I would have said that, you know, to do 300 plus SDK integrations with three developers is simply impossible, because the API documentations and everything keeps changing. So you have to maintain it and you have to, but that thing entirely changed. When the bot can understand the API documentation, that thing totally changed. So what you have is, whenever there is a new third party API, they will, you know, create a documentation that is understandable to AI. So this is where MPC comes into place. Okay. I'm going a deeper into it, but this is necessary for what I'm going to say next. Okay. This MPC is a protocol wherein the information providers, that means this API documentation or, you know, some other thing, can make themselves available to AI agents or AI models. There will come a time where content is built not only for human reading, but also for AI reading. And MPC is making that possible. And when MPC makes that possible, all the things start getting connected. And when everything starts getting connected, you have this hyperspeed. Three developers can build 300 plus SDK integrations in about a month with these bots. I mean, previously it used to take around like 2 years and like, 30 plus developers or something like that. But now they can do it in a month. So I started, you know, thinking like, what will happen? What will happen if we go at this speed? So what is the edtech industries that are getting to be affected the most, right? So already crypto has been the big game changer throughout the globe. It had liquefied all the funds and, you know, international transactions and all this. Crypto has majorly changed how the global economy is working. But crypto already happened. The blockchain technology already happened way time ago. And the breakthrough in AI is happening right now as we speak, right? And if you try to figure out the pattern, like what is going to affect being affected the most, what I thought was it will be the robotics. We are working like 2 hours per day, and we are still able to get all the above things done. I mean, as an innovator or someone at the edge tech, I would like to spend more of my time, like 8 hours or 10 hours, and build things faster. But a major, bigger IT economy or a bigger IT firm, you will not have individuals like that. But the thing I'm trying to say is, when you take away the most part of the work that you're doing, you have like 8 hours of free time in your entire day. What are you going to do with 8 hours of free time? Our parents used to go to films because they are used to have like 2.5 hours of free time. They used to go to theaters and they used to watch films. Now, at our time, we used to have like 4 to 6 hours of free time. So what did we do? We started binging TV series. Then I thought, what is the industry that is going to be most affected? That is the entertainment industry. And the entertainment industry that is capable of addicting, you know, individuals. For me, what I initially thought was VR, virtual reality. When I first heard the concept of virtual reality, right, what I thought was, there is no point, right? Things have to happen outside in the real world. But slowly, with the coming trends that are going to happen, you have 8 hours of free time. You need a particular entertainment because a human being cannot sit 8 hours just right in front of his laptop and do nothing. When I see this AI happening and it is taking away all the junior developer jobs, what I had to do was, as a developer, I had to build systems that are capable of talking with AI. So AI is, in a sense, actually pushing me to be thinking smarter, pushing me to be thinking more complex ways. Because what I'm currently doing is at least 10 times more complex than what I used to do while building full stack applications back in the day, right? But even that most complicated thing, all I need to do is build it once. I have to build it once and then it keeps on generating. So that's why I'm really excited about, you know, building even that most complicated thing at least once, because it is like recurrent, just like creating the for loop, right?
Fun working with AI is like, you get surprised.
Yeah,
because you see these like emergent behaviors that you didn't expect. Yeah. And that's because of the limited understanding we have about these AI models.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, like, it's all a black box. LLMs are black box. Nobody understands like
Nobody
how
understands.
They actually work. And
Nobody
like
understands.
People don't really understand how human brains work. So we have like
yeah,
come up
exactly.
with these like really complex and highly complicated, you know, artifacts, technological artifacts in terms of these models.
Yeah.
Through like ingenious work, and now we are in a similar boat. Like, people are like getting shocked at like the AI LLM responses when like asked few questions.
The thing is, the developers, they are only the first part of the equation. We are the biggest component that is being affected right now. But once
right.
we are affected, because we are the ones who are building, all these video editors and game editors and everything. So all of these guys will be affected next.
Right.
However, every industry is going to be affected after our thing has been done. That means first the developer jobs will be gone, and then you have all the low-level jobs in all the industries getting cut down.
One way to think about is like drawing analogies from the pre-internet era to like post-internet era.
Yeah.
For example, like GitHub is like the most popular, code for like storing code and maintaining like different
versioning
versions and everything.
Yeah.
Every junior developer now needs to have like understanding of how GitHub works in order to get employed. If they don't really like how are they going to function at work? I agree that a lot of the, low developers, like junior entry level jobs, are going to get replaced through these AI chatbots and just like through AI. We need to think about how are we prepping our new developers to be able to leverage these AI agents in order to start developing, and think about how can we use this now. So
use
how
AI.
People currently is relying on their knowledge of GitHub and like storing code. Now it's gonna be not just for storing but also generating code. Now I have this like new AI agent, and it's gonna help me develop faster. It's gonna help me develop in the direction that I want to develop. So sort of we are like wearing these like engineering manager hats already when we are getting out of like school and colleges, and now there are like new skills that we are getting to develop, which is also like leveraging AI agent to develop something. I think that's the opportunity that like we should think about. Like, now it's like managing AI agents apart from just like managing people.
Yeah. our mind configured according to the changing technological needs. Every time there is, you know, a breakthrough in a technology, we are changing as well, to a particular extent. Like if you bring someone from the early ages and bring them to the modern world, he will not even be able to adapt. Like I have this niece, na? She is around 1.5 year old. She knows how to click YouTube. She knows how to go to, you know, the particular thing that she wants to listen, and she knows all this. Because, you know, she was being given that mobile phone because she doesn't eat without the mobile phone. That is the case. Yeah. So, and what is happening is she is already recognizing the patterns, like how to, you know, interact with the device from such an early age. So she can adapt really well to the coming world. But old people will not be able to, you know, fastly adapt.
People, there's already like this is full. If you want to add something, you need to delete something.
Delete something.
So for like new like children, it's like different. Their learning rates are like so high, so that they can just like adapt and understand.
Human lifetime is 100 years span. If it was like 200 years, then we will be stuck. We will not be technologically growing. It is good that we die early, because the upcoming generation can adapt to the coming technological area. Otherwise, you know, that is it, right? That is how humans are growing this fast. Otherwise, if you take 200 years, people still sitting in the management, corporations or stuff like that. Some people work for family happiness. Some people work because it is passionate to them. I mean, it is exciting to do their own work. That's why they are working.
Right.
Of course, you are able. If you are able to find the work that you like, then all is fantastic. But unfortunately, in the world, at least 70% people are not able to find it. So for them, at least it is good that they can spend more time with their family. The problem that happens here is entertainment that is addictive will take over. I don't want people to, you know, watch TikTok. I don't want people to do.
We already have seen with Instagram and all these reels.
Yeah.
That
thing. Like AI, it does not impact itself, it will impact every other industry.
You see, it is affecting like left and right. All the robotics companies are like, so I don't see AI and robotics as separate things at all.
Okay.
So the transformers, which were invented at Google, like that paper that came out, everybody talks about attention is all you need, like 2017, Ashish Vaswani and other folks there, they came up with the model of transformers. And you know, 3 years later, after a lot of experiments, like thousands, millions, maybe like 10,000 experiments, OpenAI came up with GPT, and that tended to work very good at the benchmarks for, you know, text generation. And that is like, that yielded itself into ChatGPT, and we saw this, oh, like the AI movement, breakthrough, ChatGPT movement. But there were a lot of breakthroughs that happened in the past that actually was leading it. Similarly, like transformers have been used to robotics also. And there are a lot of models already that use transformer, but they are just not text-based, but they are also like, you know, vision-based. So LLMs are large language models, but not too large language models, but also like multimodal models is like what people are doing, particularly in robotics companies now, where like instead of just text, there's also vision, right? And there's also understanding of the actions robot can take. So end-to-end thinking about just sensory, you know, vision and the language that is coming in, and then also what the robot policy is going to be, what the robot actions are going to be. So AI and robotics is not separate. Like the technology and the innovations that happen in one or the other field, like it's just like supporting each other. So the problem right now that exists with robotic companies is, you know, how well can they, you know, come up with these models that are gonna, you know, do the job, which is like tight, like doing a manipulation task, just like picking up a bottle of water and then giving to somebody else. This is a highly complex task. So there are like a lot of different levels of abstractions we can think about. And that's where the field is right now. Like there are robots capable of doing a lot of things, a lot of different levels, but either they have to trade off for, you know, past experiences, amount of data they are trained on, or they need to trade off on like the actual like computational usage that needs to go into actually making that application happen.
So I think that's a good learning for me, because when I think about robotics, the way I used to envision it was not the way that you pictured it. So when I think about robotics, I used to think machines plainly. So I did not used
Hardware.
to ha,
Used to
just
think about hardware.
so when a robot is doing this and this and this and this, I just think that it's just a program that does this at something and that does this at something. So that was my initial picture. Now I'm trying to see that, you know, robotics, the guys who are working there are already, you know, not doing this and this but programmatically, but they're letting the robot decide it on
Oh,
the
yeah.
basis of the transfer models, right?
AI
So
and robotics are the same.
same. Okay.
I don't see it much different. Yeah. It's
Okay.
just like we have a large language model application. Text output doesn't require any robots, so that's what we think about it. But
Yeah.
the same brain, same technology, same architecture can be actually used for a robot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is a very integral component in robotics, if I have to
Oh,
say.
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The decision making component,
Yeah.
the
Yeah.
brains as such, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
There are already like papers that I can like actually like show to you where they are using the same large language model, but
Okay.
you know it outputs a text, and now just from the text you are trying to abstract out what the robot actions and what the robot policy could be.
So they I guess yeah, maybe what you said is right. 5 years will still take 5 years for robotics if what you said was correct. Basically the thing is the breakthrough happened in LLM for the text, but there needs to be a breakthrough in the neural interfaces of robots or whatever, you know, you call the decision making part. Because the thing is just doing this action is not enough. Doing this action, the complete flexibility or the mobility that my hand have, when that happens, I guess that is when what I speak about impact point. I guess
Actually,
that
you
is
know
what
what?
I mean.
A good, just like based on your example, current robots have, like, if you think of an arm, a robotic arm, it would maybe have 6 to 7 joints, 6 to 7 different motors for it to actually move and cover the whole space around it, you know?
Yeah.
Our human arm is like so, you know, it's a genius. Like
Yeah,
the
it's
way
a
they have
genius.
evolved
Yeah.
that can
Yeah.
actually move around, it like
Yeah.
swivel around, and it has like all these modalities.
Yeah.
For machines to have like that sort of like reach around them, there are 6 7 motors, and if you will ask, you know, go, hey robot, like go pick up this bottle, it will like try to optimize for something, and more often than not, it will optimize for, you know, avoiding collisions with the objects around itself. And also like maybe like and be energy efficient of like maybe like be quick and fast, so like time efficient. So it's gonna do a lot of complicated motion to go and pick up this bottle.
Okay.
And for the robot to be successful around people, like people are gonna observe that and have a, you know, mental model of what the robot personality is, like is it safe, is it friendly, should I be using it or not. And the challenge is the other way around. It's a challenge to actually make the robot motion a very intuitive and, you know, familiar motion. So
Okay.
people don't feel afraid to be around it. People know just through like observation what the robot is thinking or what the robot is doing. Like people don't like surprises.
Yeah.
If it's like doing all this, people are going to be surprised like every
Yeah.
5 minutes that I cannot trust the robot what it's going to be doing. So I think that's a
Evolution, I
key
guess.
human robot interaction challenge there. So the two school of thought is like, should we make a replica of a human, which is like what humanoids are, or should we go for something else which is more specific to the task? Say for example, if the task is for like picking an object and like bringing it to you from the kitchen to your bedroom, like do you need a human to do that? Like is that the best way of, you know, building a robot that actually needs to look like a human?
Yeah.
As long as it is familiar to the person, as long as it's, you know, intuitive, it's engaging, and it's interactive, the form factor could be a, like, it doesn't need to be a ditto replica of a human. It can be something else. It can play to your favor also, because you're not trying to, you know, go after making a human. And that way we are not building something which we don't really need. And also we are trying, like we might be able to avoid some of the creepiness that comes from like actually having like a human like replica in form of a robot. And if you think about the like Roomba like vacuum cleaner, that is not human like at all.
Yeah, but it
And
is
we have
fantastic.
seen, because it doesn't need to be. Similarly, I think the reason why people think about building a humanoid is that they want a general purpose robot. And what's a good example of a form factor that is like general
That can do
purpose?
almost about anything human.
Right, humans. So let's just like not think about all these like design choices and thinking about, let's just go after the technology, try to get a general purpose robot do all the tasks humans do. And that's why people don't have
Differentiate.
patience and they rush after like, you know, building something. Let's just like, and the design choice they make is just go after a human. I think personally I have a mindset that I would like to live in a world where, you know, objects around me have more intelligence than having a very intelligent human being. If I have like a intelligent toaster, if I have an intelligent fridge, I can, you know, leverage and live with these intelligent machines. I don't want like one intelligent like human like robot butler in the house. So
You
that's the
want a
way I want to evolve. That's the way I see the workplace
second.
and homes evolving, where we have intelligence just scattered around in objects around us.
So yeah, you're exactly right. All we need to do is we just need to make sure that those things are not too horror oriented. I guess that is all, just a little human interaction factor on every appliance. Like even that robot that cleans our things today, right? So if it has a little smiley or something going on, it would make things much more easier for me to live with it. Otherwise, I would be treating it as a cold machine, or how should I say this? Things would be more boring, I guess, if it
You
was
should
people.
read about the Uncanny Valley if you haven't, but that's
Okay.
a very popular, you know, idea, theory, whatever you can call it, which basically is like a graph, like it's in the shape of a valley. So on one axis is, I guess, creepiness
Okay.
and like just like eeriness or things that make it like very canny or like uncanny is what like on the one graph is axis is. On the other axis is how similar is it to a human. Like you can think of like a physical form factor similarity, but also behaviorally, like how similar is it, like in terms of LLMs, how similar is the intonation or the speech patterns in which it is actually saying things to a human. Because if there is a like a box which is like saying human like speech, then you can get a little surprised and, you know, irked by how similar the voice was to my own voice, for example. So the graph is like a curve.
What is it
Yeah,
called?
it's called Uncanny Valley.
Uncanny Valley.
Yep. Yeah, so let's see the graph. So yeah, if you just like open that up. So how human-like an object is, if it's too human-like, you know, you can go into the negative. The emotional comfort level will go negative. Like the worst case in here is like a zombie-like human. Like a zombie is also like human-like, right? But it behaves like in a very different manner. But it's like very close to a human, so you don't want to go into the, you know, uncanny valley by having a human-like object.
So just a little bit so that it doesn't feel too weird for the robot to be enacting exactly like a human.
Right,
So that
exactly.
is weird as well.
Right. You want to balance and try to hit those like maximum in the between, like it's halfway going towards human-like, but not all the way. Or maybe it's like completely like all like a human and people think that it's a human. But there's always this like uncanny valley that you can go into.
I think if it is almost exactly like a human with faking the emotions and all, I guess I would not like it. I would
Right.
not like what it is doing. Just like how you know fake deep fake, I don't like deep fake, right?
Right.
So just the same way, human beings I guess would not like it if it is too much like a human. Then it will make me creepy. It is just creepy that way. So I wouldn't want that much of humanity. But I guess, as I said, task dependent evolution makes much more sense, even for businesses to focus on, than actually focusing on building a generalized robot. I guess generalized robot, see, when does something like generalization happen? Generalization happen if that particular general thing is actually useful on a wider, a larger scale. But robots are not like that, right? I mean, the tasks that they need to do are very specific, always. Like, I mean, it is the case, like, let's just say if each and everything in my human appliance, like the fridge, TV, and everything, if all these things are way too costly, if it is a robot version of it, and if it is way too costly, then I would not want to buy one thing for TV, one thing for fridge, and one thing for cleaning and all that. And instead, I would rather prefer one robot which can do all the
Right.
above actions. So that's where generalization will come into play. I mean, the first school of thought, I guess that's where they win. I mean, in the terms of
I
price
agree.
point of your economicness or something.
I
But the
agree.
second school of thought is something that wins in space mining, I guess, something that has a wider impact for even for
Right.
its small role.
Right.
Even if it is a small role, it is a wider impact.
And I think like products will exist in all these different form factors and manners, and as consumers, like we will see like what the trend is. Like it also depends on the capabilities of these products. So we are going into a world where like we can expect to see intelligence in all these different form factors and in these
We can
products.
expect to be amazed once again,
Right. There are
just like we
always
were
going
in
to be
Elder
people
Chatterjee.
working on general intelligence, general purpose robots, and we will get to those maybe later, but we'll definitely get to those, and maybe at that point when they are like cheap enough and good enough that we can actually, you know, like have a lot of mass adoption around them.
I guess,
If
yeah.
the earth is still there and we are.
I guess this actually bridges some gaps in my design fiction, I'd say. I'm trying to think on what is happening in the future and how to predict it and all of that. I don't want to be a fortune teller or anything. Anything else that you want to add on, like maybe that you
I
want
get
to, yeah.
if there's one message I can like convey, like be on the side of doing it over thinking about doing it. I mean, there's a balance always, but more often than not, like you learned and you get more clarity by doing it than you get by just actually like thinking about it. And there's a term that I like to quote, which is analysis paralysis, which is you keep thinking about, you keep analyzing in your head and through like resources, and you're like basically paralyzed. You're not doing anything. The question that you are trying to solve, and you are spending like a few weeks on upon it by thinking, you could have just like done it, like give a couple of days, prototype it, see whether it worked or not, and that's it. And you are done. Like you know the answer, you are at a much better position, you have learned something by doing it. They have that builder and maker mindset that pushes you to actually, you know, build something.
Something.
I can show something that I built like these couple of weeks when I found some time. So I'm a big Rabindranath Tagore fan, and he is like an idol. I love his writings and things. So I created this web app so I can, you know, talk to him, and I used to like read and understand like his poems and works of art. But let me quickly show like what I've created here. So hi, my name is Abhijit, and I would love to learn about you and how people in India can be inspired by you.
Namaste, Abhijit. I'm truly humbled by your interest. I was a poet writer and philosopher who believed in the power of education, creativity, and universal human connection. My work sought to bridge cultures and inspire personal growth through art, literature, and spiritual understanding. I founded Visva Bharati University in Santiniketan, emphasizing holistic education that nurtures the individual's inner potential. My writings and songs continue to resonate with people seeking meaning beyond narrow boundaries, encouraging freedom of thought, respect for nature, and the unity of human spirit. Would you be interested in hearing about a specific aspect of my work or philosophy that might inspire you?
So love I it. Wanted to share this little like side project that I've been working on.
Love it. I mean, when you started, I thought, you know, this is plain LLM, right? I mean,
right.
I know how to build this like real quick, real fast. And
right.
I was not. And when that guy started speaking back, that was the impact point for me. Oh,
it's
wow.
It's not just any guy. It's Tagore himself.
It's Tagore. Yeah, I know. I understand that. Like right after hearing his voice, I kind of understood that.
Right.
Because I edited one of his voice tracked videos of Rabindranath Tagore for Janagan.
Oh.
Anyway, when I heard it, I kind of instantly connected because I know his voice already.
Right.
And the thing is that amazement factor that is there, right? I guess that is what I'm looking for people to, you know, get them out of the screen. Everything, every UX or interaction or everything is always through screen, right?
Right.
This time I was amazed not by the text printing because I have seen that many times.
Right.
I was amazed by the voice that was speaking and it was very human.
Right.
That
it's
that
amazing.
I really love it. That
I love
really
it also. I'm so excited
yeah.
that I was able to, you know, prototype this.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
The same audio that I found like a couple of audio clips on YouTube. I
yeah.
got the audio and I'm using
yeah,
the embeddings from that voice to
yeah.
you know, come up with this through a like a third party company. But
yeah.
These sort of like experiments on the side, like keep the builder mindset
builder
alive
mindset,
and you need to
yeah.
keep exploring in things and
yeah.
you know find but like the you can think about like what the experience is going to be like, but unless you actually prototype and see it in real time, like seeing
yeah.
whether that is actually clicking or not. I
you
mean I could have told you like I'm trying to build this thing and I feel like people
yeah.
will connect more if there is audio or not. You would
yeah.
have think about like based on my past experiences. But we don't have like the right like sort of signals to make a judgment about whether it will like, click and work or not. So
yeah, experience has to be experienced. That's the only
it
way
has
you
to be
know
experience.
It. Yes, yeah, then I think we were close to 2 hours in the talking, but it was good 2 hours though. I really enjoyed,
really
you know.
I always enjoy chatting
yeah.
with you.
Yeah.